You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Scouser Tommies at last. It's been ages since we've done one for all kinds of different reasons. But we're back now, and that means also we've got loads of stuff to talk about. I mean, we always do, but there's been a few games since we last did a show, so we'll sort of have a look at them. There's a bit of a pattern to them, isn't there? We'll have a bit of a think about what's coming up in the rest of the season as well, and just enjoy, I suppose, at the moment, as we record this. And it's always tempting fate when you do this, but as we record this, you know, Liverpool aren't doing too badly, but, you know, that worry about whether we'll qualify for Europe is a little bit less of a worry, but there's still time for us to mess it up, isn't there, Jay?
Yes, let's hope not. I think I said a couple of podcasts ago, I fancied us to win the season out, and actually, true to form, we've done well so far. I think the Chelsea draw might have been our last dropped points in the league, and then since then we've. Arsenal, sorry, it was Chelsea then, Arsenal back-to-back, wasn't it, within a week? Since then we've gone on a little run, six spins on a win, which is, in this context of the season, it's probably to be surprised because it's not been normal or, you know, anything that we've been used to in recent times. But one thing that we have got used to in recent years is towards the end of the season, we do tend to put a run of games together where, you know, we've been challenging for titles in years gone by, and unfortunately not this season, but we're competing for the potential spot at the big boys table in Europe next season. As we speak, you know, the likelihood is it's not in our hands anyway, and it's probably not in our favour in terms of the teams ahead of us have got a game in hand and a couple of points ahead of us, so we need favours from other boys. But you know, all we can do is do our own business. And that sounds very cliche, but if we win our own games and take care of our own stuff, then anything else that comes is a bonus. I think one thing that probably will be guaranteed is we do our own business. We will have European football on Anfield next season, be that the Europa League, hopefully the Champions League, and with all due respect, hopefully not the Europa Conference League, I think it's called. You know, whatever competition it is, European teams at Anfield, there's always a good little vibe to it. And yeah, Thursday, Sunday's not what we wanted, but it gives us a shot at a trophy. And, you know, it was one that's eluded Klopp in all due respect, because he made the final in his first season, and Sevilla beat us in Bar, I think it was, 3-1, after a nice Daniel Sturridge goal. So if we can get that trophy in the bag, then, you know, it'll still be celebrated as much as any other trophy.
I remember, you know, when you're saying about the trophy, two things spring to mind about the Europa League. Someone, I must have tweeted or wrote or said something about Klopp and saying, oh, he's won all the trophies he can now, because he has, at Anfield, that is, won all the trophies he can. And someone said, he's not won the Europa League. And I was thinking, well, there's a good reason for that. Like, there's a reason why he's not won the Europa League at Anfield. But, you know, I'll leave you to it. And also, years ago, some Evertonians sort of thinking it was really, you know, worth having a dig that we'd never won the Cup Winners' Cup. But for the same reason, we'd never won the Cup Winners' Cup, because we'd always been winning the actual league or the European Cup. So we never kind of got entered for the Cup Winners' Cup. When we could have qualified for it, we didn't go into it, generally speaking. So it's and that's the kind of thing I've been used to for years. You know, growing up, I was used to it. We got used to it for a little spell, you know, a while back. And then we got used to it again recently. And it's going to be strange doing the Thursdays. And strange not having that theme tune as well, the one that they played for the... Apparently, they played for the coronation. I was on Twitter and everyone was going crazy saying, is that song we know? So just sort of flicked the TV over and did a quick rewind of it. And they were playing the Champions League theme for King Charles for some reason. So I don't know why. Maybe he's getting into the cups as well. But the truth is, whatever competition we end up in next year, it feels like, as you've just said, it's in our hands to sort of guarantee some sort of European football, get some favours out of other people, and it's much better European football. But in all honesty, we messed up earlier on in the season, and it's just so frustrating to think how many times we messed up as well. But as you say, this run, we got beaten by City well and truly, two draws, Chelsea, Arsenal, beat Leeds 6-1, and then, you know, that was the first win of this current run as at the time of recording, which have all been by a single goal since then, all the wins. It feels like that is, in a way, the kind of Liverpool that we get to know at the end of a season as well, because it's not always about going out and winning handsomely. It's about going out and doing just enough to get the points, isn't it? And feels like that's what we've done. I mean, it was hard work watching how we nearly threw all the way. Well, let's go back to it. That 4-3 against Tottenham. Oof. You know, we absolutely wiped the floor with them after like 15 minutes. And then we relaxed and we nearly lost it. But even so, I suppose now that the pain's died away from how frightening it was, really, how much we'd nearly really messed it up, we did relax too much. But in the end, at the end of it, we did just enough, didn't we? We got the 3 points.
Yeah, and it was... I remember standing on the cop up there and was like, in dreamland after 15 minutes, well, this is going to be a Man United all over again. You know, it could be 7. You know, we had the stopwatch on. How long did it take Newcastle to get to 5 goals when they tonked Spurs a couple of weeks earlier? And it was like, can we beat Newcastle's record time of putting Spurs 5 goals down? And I think, yeah, the complacency certainly kicked in then. And, you know, Tottenham, for all their woes, I've still got decent players in the team. And they created enough chances that day and, you know, they put them away. They were always a threat, even when they were 3-0 down. Like, you know, 15 minutes into a game, if you were on, you know, the Tottenham side of things, you'd still think, you know what, there's plenty of time here. Like, it's been done before, you know. We've been witness to it ourselves. We were 3-0 down with 45 minutes to go in a game and managed to claw it back.
Yeah.
But then seeing that bleached Palmland Ronaldo come on in Richarlison and his R9 copyright that he's going for, I was 3-2, and I'd said, you know what, he's not scored a goal all season. He's just going to come on and score. And true to form, the little pigeon dancer did. However, the story didn't end there, did it? And it couldn't have happened to a sweeter person, and it couldn't have been more Evertonian that this fella whips his shirt off, does his little stupid pigeon dance, gets himself a nice yellow card and thinks, that's it, now I'm a true Everton hero, even though I'm playing in the white shirt at Tottenham. Yeah. And I couldn't wait to get away from Goodison Park quick enough that Diogo Jota goes down the other end and bags and sends us all into raptures. And I learned a lesson a few years ago. You never leave the game early. Leave the game early. If you think you're going to, you know, sneak 5 minutes on the traffic, then yes, so be it. But with Liverpool, you never quite know. And that was a classic case in that situation where, you know, all was lost and there was probably a few thousand Reds who've stormed up the ground thinking, ah, he's gone and done it him, hasn't he? But you just never, never know. And, you know, the form that we're on, you know, teams like Newcastle and Manchester United, we are chasing that. I'm probably looking at going, you know what, these bloody bastards aren't going away. And it's so Liverpool to win by the odd goal, to get a late goal. And as much as it, like, you know, sent us into jubilation, it really wiped the eye of Richarlison and all the Evertonians who thought, ah, you know what, he might not be in the blue shirt, but he's done it for us. Well, he didn't. You know,
it's so Everton though as well, isn't it? He was kind of celebrating a draw, you know.
It was so Spurs that, you know, the whole bottle job thing, like, you know, they got back into it and they just couldn't quite get over the line. Maybe it's a North London thing, but it was also so Everton that, like, you know, yes, we've got a draw. Like, we've went to the Anfield and we've got a draw. And then you think, have you though? Have you really? Because if you're not learning from all them, you're like, you know, Sadio Mane a couple of years ago in the derby, you thought you'd got a point out of us and he's nicked it off you. You know, Divock Origi nicked the points off you. He's like, you should know better than that. Like, wait until the final whistle's gone and the ball has been picked up by the little midgets in the referee's chairs. And then he's walked off the pitch and gone, that's it, the game definitely over. Because it's not actually over until we've actually stopped playing. That was a sweet, sweet victory.
He raised his game, though, as well. I was thinking, like, the thing about we've said about Everton over and over again is they'll have a mediocre season, but then they quite often play well against us and sometimes give us a bit of a hard time, but then in the end we'll prevail. I mean, other times they can't even raise the game. They've had some absolutely pathetic games against us in some occasions, but on the whole, it's their cup final, and it was like as if it was his cup final, wasn't it? He brought that with him.
Yeah, it was, and it was like he come on to a big fanfare, and I there must have been more than a few thousand Liverpool fans in that stadium who just thought it's just him. Like, he's coming on, and he's just not scored all season, and it just will be typical because the way we were cruising through the game and the way we'd let them back in, and I don't even remember who the referee was on that day, but I'm sure he was terrible. They always are. And it just felt like, you know, we're just giving them opportunity after opportunity. Like, we'd seen it a couple of games earlier on against Nottingham Forest. Like, we get ourselves in front and then we just give away, like, stupid free kicks, or we're allowing, you know, with Nottingham Forest case, we're allowing them throw-ins, like, you know, halfway into our own half, where they've got this Niakata who can sling a ball like a slingshot into the box, and we just think, we're masters of our own downfall here. Like, why are we doing it to ourselves? And again, with Tottenham, like, Harry Kane, the master of falling over in a small breeze, like, it doesn't take much to blow him over, but it was needless free kicks we were giving away, and you just think, that's where the goal came from, a needless free kick on the touchline, and, you know, they lumped the ball in the box, and yeah, it was something that we've done to ourselves, but we've managed to find this inner steel in the last few games. And as you say, odd goal wins, apart from the Leeds game, it's getting us over the line. And, you know, it's not doing your blood pressure any good. It's not doing the grey hairs on your head any good if you've got any left. Like, you know, I'm not sure I can stand much more of this season. But as we record tonight, going into Leicester, I'd do anything for, like, you know, a 2-3 goal win. Just, you know, nice and simple, not an over the top, not on, like, too contentious. Just get a couple of goals and see the game out and make sure the game is wrapped up and we move on to Saturday, which is Villa at home, which will be a much tougher game. Even though Leicester are fighting for their lives, I do think, you know, if we be professional about it, we should be able to handle the situation.
Yeah, you're right. Couple of tough games against sort of East Midlands and West Midlands,
West Midlands Villa.
I couldn't think then for some reason. You know, so we got these two Midland sides coming up, and obviously they're having different fortunes. Just thinking back again about that Spurs game, it was kind of, I don't even know which game is which now, because we've had like a little run of them where we've had these like you mentioned you don't know who the ref was. We've had dodgy referees, and there's two that stick out to me. That's Paul Tierney and Anthony Taylor. Now, Anthony Taylor is from Withan Short in Manchester, but because he supports Aldringham, it means he can referee our games. Fair enough. Except it's not fair enough because, same with Paul Tierney, supposedly from Wigan, also in Greater Manchester, but doesn't support a Manchester team as such, supports Wigan, if anyone. His son actually is a rugby, or his stepson was a rugby league player as well, until recently as well. So you kind of get the feeling, oh, well, you know, he's not going to be someone who sort of supports a team that's a proper rival to Liverpool. But the thing is, and I don't know about you, but if you listen to people who are from outside Liverpool but nearby, you're forever hearing this sort of anti-Scouse sentiment, and you don't get that with anyone else, I don't think. Don't get me wrong, if there was a Scouse referee being asked to referee, and he said he supported, supported Marine or something.
Mike Dean.
Yeah, from the Wirral, yeah.
Wirral was supported, and you couldn't have doubted his support for Tranmere.
No, but on the other hand, if someone had said, listen, should he be refereeing Liverpool-Everton games, because he's from Merseyside, and, you know, sorry, should he be refereeing Liverpool games against any Manchester side or whatever, or any Manchester team, because he's from the Wirral, he's kind of Scouse, he's got, you know, that hatred amongst that Scousers have, maybe, then I wouldn't be bothered. But I think there's one thing about, I don't know what it is, but for some reason Scousers get this sort of hatred of so many different people that it's bordering on people out the way, racist people do almost, that it just goes that little bit too far. It's not, you know, it's not based on anything real, it's genuine hatred and genuine dislike. And I hear it time and time again. I mean, sometimes you hear it off people who, you know, they sort of don't realise where you're from if you're sort of out, you know, if you're out and about somewhere else. It shouldn't even be even under question that if a referee is from the Manchester area, that they can't referee a Liverpool game. It doesn't matter who they say they support, because it's not just about who you support, this hatred for Liverpool, is it? It's not just... Aldringham fans do not love Liverpool as a city all of a sudden, do they? They're not like all going around saying, oh, I love Liverpool, great people. They're more likely to be like other people in the Manchester area. Withan Short, again, I cannot believe if you went in a Withan Short pub and started speaking really loud in a Scouse accent, that everyone would be coming by and you pint and calling you, you know, wanting to be your mate. You're more likely to get some daggers and maybe even a bit of trouble just because of your accent. So why on earth do we have these referees doing our games?
Answered on a postcard, please. Send them to Gags at Anfield Index. Because I don't actually know. And I don't believe for one second that across the country there's all these county FAs. Obviously, we come under Liverpool County FA and where we are here. And then, you know, there's Manchester County FA. I've done a coaching badge there. And yes, I didn't get well received because I was from Liverpool and doing my coaching badge in Manchester. But there is, you know, tens of county FAs around the country of which have referees coming through the system because, you know, Sunday League, Saturday League, junior football, grassroots football is played all over this country. You know, might be played in some places more than others. You know, like there is obviously like a hotbed for football in certain parts of the country where other parts of the country might have other sports that might be more popular, you know, like cricket or rugby union, for example, or rugby league, especially in the northwest of England, like towns like bordering Liverpool, Manchester region, like Warrington, Widnes, St. Helens, if people know the area, they're the sort of towns that are in between Liverpool and Manchester, and they're rugby league towns. But
yeah.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
the chances are the people within them towns will say, yeah, I like St. Helens or Widnes Rugby League. However, I follow Liverpool or Manchester United or, you know, Everton or in modern times, probably Manchester City. There's got to be referees in these systems. However, it always seems to be the Manchester or the Greater Manchester based referees who are the ones getting the top jobs. And you don't tend to see, you know, a referee from Bristol or from Norwich or from Southampton. Like, there probably is if you went through the profiles. But, you know, the only other one I can think of from a significant area of the country is Michael Oliver's from Newcastle. And I think he's openly a Newcastle fan. So I don't think he's given Newcastle games for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very, very strange coincidence how there is so many. And I've not got anything to do with the fact that it was Mike Riley and now Howard Webb who were running the PGMOL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a conspiracy theorist might say that's all too coincidental, but it does seem to be the same small group of referees that when we have them in games, not only do we have them in regular occasions, but they're always in regular big games. Like, you know, Paul Tierney, I think, was Arsenal possibly, or Spurs. Anthony Taylor, we've had him numerous times for games involving Liverpool and Manchester City or Liverpool and Manchester United because he is now currently deemed the top ref in the country. I mean,
shows you how good it is, doesn't it?
You're the best of a bad bunch is the best way of summing that up. But it does just seem like, you know, you'd often see the phrase like bouncing around on social media, it's live Liverpool, you know, because we might get the odd VAR decision. It took us 31 games before we got a penalty all season. And yes, okay, we've had a couple more in recent games. Only that springs to mind because Mo Salah's missed a couple. But Mo Salah gets mugged every game. Like the amount of fouls that actually aren't given on him is unbelievable. Like, you know, as I said earlier on, it doesn't take much for Harry Kane to fall over. And I remember back in the Spurs game when I think it was Ben Davis was tugging back Mo Salah, and you know he's trying to hold him off. He's not swung an elbow. He's not swung an arm. He's put an arm to see where the player is who's pulling his shirt, like just to hold him off to try and, like, you know, keep on his 2 feet. And Ben Davis goes down an absolute heap, and the referee blows up and gives the foul against Mo Salah. And then, you know, you've got the whole hoo ha over Diogo Jota's high foot when, you know, the social media furore that was, you know, Diogo Jota should probably be banned for 6 or 7 games because he had his foot in the air, won the ball, and then connected with Oliver Skip's head. But however, when Erling Haaland done it earlier on the season, Joachim Andersen from Crystal Palace threw his head into Haaland's boot. You know, it just doesn't add up. Let's have a level of consistency, which that's all we want. If the referees are going to be so bad, that's fine. Just be consistently bad. Just let us have the same decisions week on week. That's all we're asking for. Because if you're going to give a handball for a touch in someone's fingernail, which was in the recent game between Leeds and Newcastle, well, there's been much more situations where the ball has struck people in the arm. And yes, it's gone in our favour a few times. You know, you think back to West Ham and the ball when Thiago fell and it hit his arm. That could easily have been given. I was expecting it to be given.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's just have a level of consistency across the board. That's all we're asking for.
The other thing as well is, I mean, just back on that, I mean, when I say, like, it's almost racist the way people talk to people from Liverpool, I don't mean, I'm not sort of comparing the two directly, but what I'm thinking is the mindsets of a lot of people, you know, the same kind of sort of attitude of just trying to sort of belittle other people because of something that's different about them is how a lot of people are with Scousers. And I think that's not for 1 minute saying that Tierney or Taylor are like that, but the truth is, because of where they're from, anytime they get a decision that's controversial in any way, it feels like it could be because of where they're from. It could even be sometimes when they do a good favour, you know, when they do us a favour, that it's almost as if they're trying to compensate from where they're from to try and pretend that they're not. And the way you get rid of that is just don't put anyone who could possibly, you know, even slightly have any kind of perception that they could have some bias, don't put them on that game. Just don't do it. And, you know, that means you've got to get your finger out and find some better referees from around the country to do it. But the other thing, and we've said it so many times, I'm sure, you know, why does one identical decision in week one look get a totally different reaction, you know, in week two of a season? You know, why does one incident that looks identical in that game not get treated the way in the next game? And sometimes there's a reason for it. I mean, that incident with Thiago, if you read sort of the letters of the law and all the rest of it, then it wasn't a handball because there wasn't much you could do about it. But as you say, you've seen them given loads and loads. There's never an explanation, you know, and that sometimes might mean, you know, putting your hands up and saying, I cocked up. I thought that's what it was. And, you know, there'd be a lot more respect for referees then because, I mean, the guy who's on the pitch has got to make a decision in a split second. They get let down time and again by VAR. I mean, it's a shame that VAR aren't sometimes allowed to just give him a shout and say, look, although this isn't one of the things where we're told you, meant to tell you to have another look, you really could do with having another look. Otherwise, we'll not hear the end of this next week. But at the same time, it slows the game down enough as it is. It's just been a mess, hasn't it? One way or another, you know.
On the referees.
Yeah.
Just to cut across you. Tonight's referee, as we record, is Craig Pawson. And I just had a quick Google there. Who does Craig Pawson support and where's he from? So he's from Sheffield. And God. if you just put into Google, who does Craig Pawson support? And the first thing that pops up, big letters, Craig Pawson, Sheffield United. 2015 League Cup final referee is based in South Yorkshire and is a fan of the Blades. 42-year-old has never refereed a match involving United, Sheffield obviously, and Wednesday, or South Yorkshire rivals Doncaster or Rotherham. So
yeah,
he's not allowed to referee the teams he's from or the rivals. Yeah, you know, Paul Tierney, Anthony Taylor, two Manchester-based referees, there's more as well, are happy to take part in games that, you know, from the region they're based in, City, United, and rivals, i.e. Liverpool and Everton, because they're, you know, there is still a rivalry between Everton and Manchester United. That's quite fierce, to be quite honest with you. You know, so how does that stack up?
It doesn't. And you're right about the rivalry. I mean, there was times when both sets of fans got involved in the rivalry in days gone by. Tony, when we get Tony on again, I'm sure you can... He can explain some of those situations in the past about the rivalries back in the day. But yeah, the rivalry is there. And I mean, the other thing as well is, in a way, I mean, it's where you draw the line. But even then, I'd be sort of saying, should someone from Sheffield be refereeing our games? Because, again, there's still a lot of sort of resistance from that city towards our city, I would say, from a lot of people.
You say about the resistance towards Scousers, it's derogatory, isn't it, really? Yeah. And what baffles my mind is my partner's from the West Midlands. So I've been down to see her family for, you know, nearly 13 years now we've been together. And being into, like, local pubs in the West Midlands area, and you're asked for something at the bar, and instantly the bar staff are like, you're not from around here. I was like, well, no shit, Sherlock. And they're like, oh, they look blank, and they're like, they look at her, and she has to basically order what I've asked for because, you know, my native tongue is too hard to understand for people who don't understand a Scouse accent. However, I've had conversations with people, and they're like, you know, Scousers, make sure my car's locked outside, keep your eye on your handbag, love. And, you know, when you get speaking to them, you go, actually, have you ever been to Liverpool? And they go, oh, yeah, I have. And how'd you find it? Oh, we had a great night. It was lovely. You got really good bars and clubs and restaurants up there. And like, so what's the problem? Like, genuinely, what is the problem? Like, you will find most people who were derogatory and downplay Liverpool as a city and the people of Liverpool, when they actually come to the city.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And experience for what actually it is, whether that be for football, whether that be for, you know, a night out, food, drink, you know, see the architecture, the museums, whatever they come for, music. You always go away probably with comments saying, that was better than what I thought it'd be. Mm. You know, what, the people are really nice, they're really friendly up there. Like, I wish it was more like that where I lived. And you think, well, what's your prejudice for? Like, you know, you listen to idiots who probably have never been to Italy, or you read stuff that was lies in the media, and we can go on to that one forever, but come and actually have a look. Like, come and see what we're about. And I'm sure your opinion will be 10 times different than what it actually is now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? People fall for all these stereotypes. I mean, I know, in a way, I'm kind of falling from it by having to go up the Manx, because I know a lot of people from Manchester who are actually okay. You know, believe it or not, it might sound hard to believe, but they are, they're great. And to be honest with you, when you get talking to them, they're not, a lot of them aren't sort of, whether they do it when I'm not around, but there's no sort of anti-Scouse stuff really comes out of them, other than the sort of general sort of football stuff that you get between everyone, you know, nothing sort of nasty or whatever that you might get, you know, as soon as you look on social media, as soon as you're listening to visiting fans singing, that kind of stuff, none of that, you don't really get that. I just think, though, as well, I think part of that is maybe because, as you're saying, they're having their eyes open, instead of just falling for all the crap that other people say, they're having a chance to sort of look with their own eyes, listen with their own ears. And that was something, let's get on to it now. When that coronation thing was going on, which was, you know, thanks to that king guy for giving us an extra day off, wasn't exactly like peak viewing. I saw the Echo the day after, and they'd really scraped the barrel trying to show that people from Liverpool were getting involved. They managed to find one woman from somewhere, I can't think where she was now. It was actually, that was the thing, she was actually from Liverpool. He stuck some Union Jacks in a window. But then the other people they interviewed were people who were in that Eurovision village, and was like, so these people travelled up from Manchester, and these people were here from London or wherever. So they actually struggled to get anyone to interview from Liverpool to say, yay, it's the King's coronation, aren't we loving it? Here's me flag. So, because obviously the true feeling for that and for that whole weekend was Liverpool, Everton and Tranmere basically got told by the whoever it was that they had to play the national anthem at their games, and all three of them protested against it. Now, I didn't actually hear the Everton or the Tranmere ones, I just read about it, but I can't believe either of them were anything like the protest from Anfield, because if ever you're going to send a message out, that was it, wasn't it?
It was stupid to do it in the first place. The club hung the fans out to dry, I thought, there. I felt, you know, they've probably put themselves in a rock and a hard place in being advised that it was to be played. But
what would have happened if they'd have said no? That's what I was thinking. You know, fine.
Yeah. I mean, what are they going to do? Is Charles going to come down here with his band of merry men and tell us, oh, you didn't sing, you didn't play allegiance to me or sing my song or whatever? Like, so what?
I'd like to see him come down here on the band.
No one cares. Take your sausage fingers somewhere else, mate, because we don't care. It was a bit stupid, and like, they knew what was going to happen. I think, like, you know, the headlines were written before we'd even got in the ground, and all it was, they were just waiting for that first second of the so-called national anthem to be played and the reaction, and it was send. Like, whatever social media outlets you can get your news out there on, it was done. You know, like, within, the game kicked off at 5:30, and that was probably happening at, what, 5:27 by 5:29.
Yeah.
You know, all news outlets had, like, you know, Scousers disgrace of the country and all that, and, you know, we don't really care. It was a stupid thing to do. I think, like, they should have just not even marked it at all. And, you know, if they would have got a fine for whatever, for disrespecting the monarchy, then so what? Like, I'm sure you could have done a whip round the ground, and he would have happily said, you know what, we'll pay it ourselves if we don't have to play that shite in the ground.
I don't even think he would have noticed. If someone had said, oh, by the way, Charles, you know, on your busy day when you've had your funny hat on and all the rest of it and gone in your little carriage and all, whatever else you've done, by the way, up on Merseyside, some people booed your song.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't have been asked.
No.
Like, it was... it was silly to do it in terms of, you know, like, what, why create something that we didn't know what was going to happen. But what I found most enjoyable was that was what, as we record this, like the weekend before what we've just had there. That was all on the Saturday, wasn't it? And then the Sunday, as you mentioned, there was a Eurovision concert for the launch of Eurovision Week on St George's Hall. And obviously, because Charles had to have a special day, we all got a bank holiday Monday off, which that was the only good thing about it, is we got an extra day off work. But yeah, thanks for that anyway. But it just meant that we could actually have a concert for what we wanted, which was Eurovision. And, you know, there's been more hype and more excitement and more enjoyability about the whole city because of what's gone on the last week with Eurovision than what, you know, occurred the weekend before with all the flag waving weirdos with the coronation, because that's what we are. Like, I seen a tweet the other day about, like, you know, downgrading Liverpool for getting all excited about Eurovision and being so proud about it, but because we see ourselves as more European. This city would be nothing without Europe. You know, the EU saved our city, all the money and all the funding that they've helped rebuild the city to what it is now. It's all due to Europe, and we're welcoming to people from all over the world. And, you know, like as we say earlier on, like, come and see what we're about. If you haven't got a clear judgment on Liverpool, then you're from whatever else in the country. We'll come and see what we're about. Well, it's the same for anywhere in the world. And we're the most welcoming city. And there's so many people from different cultures and backgrounds and countries that live here anyway. It made sense to have Eurovision here. And I will confess, you know, I wasn't ashamed. I sit there and watched the semi-finals last week. I watched the final on Saturday because it showed our city to be what a great city it is. There was so much going on, and a lot of it was free, which was even better. Like, all the concerts up until Saturday night were free to enter. There was loads of stuff going on around the city. There was loads of, you know, volunteers who gave up the time to make sure people coming from other parts of the world were able to enjoy themselves. And it just shows what a great city of people we've got. I'm really proud that we put on Eurovision and yeah, we might have been representing Great Britain, but, you know, we were representing ourselves more than anyone, and it went off really well. And I think anybody within the Eurovision sort of, you know, echelons and thinking, well, if it does ever end up back in England or Great Britain, then why not send it back to Liverpool, because we've really done a good job of it.
Yeah, I remember someone sort of saying to me, do you want to win? And I'm like, to be honest, I didn't know I didn't have a clue what any of the songs were. Like, I hadn't watched that much of the build-up, so I didn't know that many of the songs before it was on. And I just said, part of me wants Britain to win because I'd love it to come back here. And then I thought, you know what, if it did come back here, I bet you they'd say, oh no, we need to do it at the O2 now, you know, this time. Let's do it at the O2. And they wouldn't have got what they got in Liverpool. I mean, for one thing, Liverpool remembered that it was being done sort of for Great Britain, but really it was being done for Ukraine. And I'm not sure every other city would have kind of remembered that as well. That's maybe not being fair, but I just think, you know, we were good in that way. Another observation was, I was watching the sort of results coming in, and then like San Marino popped up giving their votes, and I'm thinking, if San Marino, like a little tiny thing that's, you know, it's not really, it's pushing it to call it a country, isn't it? You know, if they can get an entry, maybe Liverpool should get an entry in Eurovision, you know, maybe a first step to independence from the rest of the country. I don't know. If Australia can enter, I don't see why Liverpool can't have their own entry. So, you know, maybe something for us to appeal for in years to come. But the other thing as well, all those people you mentioned, all those things that went on, you know, that was done by the people from Liverpool as well. It wasn't like they ship loads of people in from all around the country to get everything on. Don't get me wrong, there will have been people coming in because there's so much to do. But I saw so many people I know working on Eurovision, you know, so many people on social media that I know who were involved in one way or another, who were helping out, being involved, doing things. You know, the city knows how to do these things. The city knows how to put these events on. The city knows how to welcome people as well, like you were saying. It was strange. One thing as well was so many Union Jacks being waved, and it didn't bother me because it almost felt like they weren't the other Union Jacks. It was almost like you could put up with it. Do you get what I mean? It wasn't like when you see a Union Jack, normally it upsets you because, you know, it reminds you of why we boo the national anthem, the whole way we've been treated, this, you know, managed decline and all the rest of it. I mean, if if the Tories had got the way in the 80s, there wouldn't have been anything to do a Eurovision from in this city last weekend, because they would have left it to ruin and let it rot. And one of the reasons it didn't rot, as you say, is because of EU money, because of European money and helping us regenerate. And who's to say what's going to happen in the future now that that's gone, and whether, you know, whether we are still going to find ways of getting money in. But I think, as we showed at the weekend, you know, we don't necessarily need handouts. We can do things, you know, just give us a chance.
Not only that, the Union Jacks, as you say, were probably people who weren't from Liverpool. there was so many people, like, you see the interview on the telly or whatever, and they're like, where have you come from? They're like, oh, I've travelled from, you know, X part of the country to be here because the Eurovision fans. And, you know, the whole, like, you know, stigma around Eurovision is like, oh, it's not for everyone, but it is. Like, it is for everyone. It doesn't matter where you're from. And the thing around Eurovision as well is it's a lot of LGBTQ friendly.
Yeah.
So they'll have a lot of, you know, LGBTQ people involved, and they see Eurovision as like a little competition that they can connect with and resonate with, because, you know, they might be able to find a release in that, or find like a little bit of freedom within it.
Yeah.
And as a city, we're really, you're going to use the word pride. We're proud of having, like, you know, an area of the city that is really dominated and heavily supported of the LGBTQ community. And, you know, there's pride events every year. I think it's usually around July, if I remember rightly. And, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't comfortable to be able to openly speak about it. But at an event like Eurovision in a city like Liverpool, they were able to come and enjoy themselves and feel free and be able to openly express their own emotions and own feelings. And I think, would you be able to do that in other parts of the country? I would question if you could, because there's other parts of the country which, you know, to use a Dave Hendrick term, is very gammon and gravy. You know, very Brexit, very, you know, white British, and I'm man and she's woman and we have children and that's the way we do things, and anyone from anywhere else is not welcome in my part of the land. And I just think, you know, we were the only candidates, in my opinion. I think, you know, when it got decided that the UK was hosting, I think it was Glasgow, maybe Leeds, Sheffield, Liverpool, and maybe Birmingham, we were in contention for it. And I think, like, you know, other than us, possibly Glasgow, but I wouldn't fancy it going anywhere else and getting the, you know, the sort of reception and putting on the party that it did. And I think that's what it was. It was a whole week of partying. It was just an atmosphere. And, you know, if you've seen scenes on how Liverpool as a club and the city celebrate when we win trophies, then, you know, it just gives you an idea of what we can do. And there's not a more that Scouse people love than a good party.
Yeah, one thing as well, I think I was really proud of, and it kind of hit home, because I heard someone say that they were having, over in Manchester, they were having like their own little sort of fan village type thing, you know, where you could watch it on big screens. And that's in a place called Piccadilly Gardens, which, anyone who knows Manchester at all, I mean, I'd not heard of it really in this sort of detail, but in recent years I've got to know that it's not exactly the nicest place in the world. And as well as that, one thing that it hasn't got, and it's not its own fault, Manchester's own fault, is it's landlocked. And just the pictures of the arena and the fan park at the side of the river, by the side of the water, you know, when the summer's coming down and all the rest of it. I've been at concerts there as well in the past. It's an amazing setting that we are so lucky to have, and it just looks amazing when you see it like that as well. It can be easy sometimes to kind of take it for granted, can't it? You're going past this place all the time and you just don't think much of it. You sort of sit in traffic or whatever else. But it's an amazing place. It's so photogenic. And maybe I'm biased, could well be, but I just think it is. I just think it's a wonderful place. And also, I think what was good, we might as well get it in now, Graham Norton saying he had to wipe a little tear away. And that was because they just sung You'll Never Walk Alone, which, that's the one bit that maybe took a little bit of the friendliness away from the city as a whole, isn't it? Because some people in the city don't like that song.
Yeah, it was very quick to react in terms of the blue half of the city. I've seen one person get offended because they pull out Eurovision in Liverpool and a red heart, and they were like, there's blue hearts available as well, you know. You know, like, it doesn't have to always be about you. Like, you know, it's a heart because, you know, the predominant colour for a heart of love is red. Like, it's not for Liverpool. And yeah, like, you know, they certainly weren't going to, you know, introduce Graham Norton and the rest of the panel coming out to Zed cars, were they, you know, onto the stage. So,
no. Oh, we don't care what the red shirts say.
It was a touching rendition, and You Never Walk Alone means a lot to so many people for so many different reasons. But, you know, I think, you know, even Lord Ragnar Klavan, who gave Estonia's points jury votes out, whatever, you know, he had a touching message and said, like, it, like, a message not only for the people of Liverpool, but for the people of Ukraine, which, again, as you say, who we were representing it for, like, that you'll never walk alone. Like, it, the connotation of the saying and the connotation of the words within the song is of hope and is of togetherness. It's not just, oh, it's the red shite and that's what they sing. It's, there's a lot more context and meaning to it. And given what the competition was about and what we were representing it for, it was very touching. And the rendition by the guy who sung it, I forgive me, wherever he was from, I think it may have been Denmark, on the night, and then there was clips going round of the mass screening, which I think was at the Pierhead, and the thousands of people there all openly singing it open air. Like, it's sung differently to what it's sung at the match.
Yeah,
like, it's a different type of emotion involved, and it's touching. It does bring a tear to your eye, and even if you have not got any sort of actual connection to Liverpool in one way or another, it will touch it emotionally. And, you know, Graham Norton, as he said, like, and I think it was Hannah Waddingham as well, who was presenting the show with him.
Yeah.
She said, like, it does, it brings a tear to your eye, and it just shows, like, it's not just about football. Like, it can be so much more than that. And as we've always said, like, football games are just that 90 minutes on a Saturday afternoon or whenever you play, or if it's a couple of hours out of your day or your week, you know, to meet up with people that you'd only see that time of the week or whatever, to just get away from real life and just enjoy it. And that song, it takes you somewhere else, and it's a special meaning. And, you know, it did rattle a few cages, but it said a lot more about the cages it rattled of those people than what actually the bigger meaning of the playing of the song that night.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people who chose to say nothing as well, because I think that's another thing to do. I always think, when there's something going on that you don't approve of, sometimes you're better to say nothing, you know, just keep quiet. And I would say there's quite a few, maybe just rather than kick off about it, just stay quiet. But yeah, I saw one comment was someone saying, look at that, the red shite won't be happy because they've used blue lighting for this rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone. I'm thinking, I doubt anyone really noticed, to be quite honest with you. We were just thinking, you know, this song, and as much as it means something to us, like you say, it's not just our song. It's been a song that's meant so much for us, though. I mean, we've had it through sad times, happy times, exciting times. Unbelievable how the hell did we win that time. You know, we've had it for some really trivial reasons, but I don't think it was trivial on that day. And I just think, I hope, though, that this is like a message. What we saw from that competition, that whole coverage, that whole week, the people coming away, presenters and all kinds of people you heard just really, really genuinely bigging up the city and saying how nice the people were as well. I just hope it keeps spreading that way, and we get maybe who knows, that stereotype will start to be eroded away a little bit. But also, you know, let's have more of these things every year up here. I mean, if for no other reason, and another little dig, but at least that Bramley Moor Dock Stadium might get a bit of use then as well, you know, because, you know, just talking about Everton, it's, I think they'll survive, to be quite honest, now this season, but they're going to the wire again, aren't they, our mates?
Yeah. I mean, nobody in their right mind had them to get that victory at Brighton the other week, and not only the victory, the manner of the victory. It was 5-1, I think, in the end. Like, you know, I think I've seen a few people had a bet online. It was like, they were 7-1 just to win alone. You know, like, you would have got few hundred to one for, you know, a 5-1 victory for them. I thought they'd get absolutely smashed here because, you know, Brighton are a really good team. They proved that yesterday when they dealt with Arsenal. And, you know, if they can do the same on Thursday night against Newcastle, then, you know, maybe it opens that door ever so slightly more for us to possibly sneak in the top four.
Although I think, can they still catch up to us in the table? I mean, obviously, things could have changed by the time people are listening to this, but they've got, at the moment, before we play Leicester, they've got a game in hand on us. And yeah, the four behind, so they can't catch us off unless we mess up.
So if they do beat Newcastle, it would technically do us a favour. And maybe give us a shot. But yeah, I think, you know, it, looking at the table at the time, I thought, well, they won't pick up 3 points from Brighton. They got put to bed by Man City, which was to be expected, but those 3 points have obviously taken them to 32. If they didn't have them, they'd be on 29. They would be 19th. They'd be behind Leeds. They'd be behind Leicester.
Yes.
You know, it would have looked like the trapdoor was about to suck them in. But I do think that might have just been enough. I fail to see where Leeds and Leicester are going to get enough points to climb above Everton. And I think Everton have got Wolves away the weekend coming up, and then Bournemouth at home. I do think that, you know, they'll get at least a point from one of them games, and I fail to see if Leeds and Leicester can get enough to both claw them back. But
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked, and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial, and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
On the other side of the coin, that's now 2 years on a row that they're potentially going to the last couple of games of the season. And as we've seen with Southampton, if you flirt with danger year after year, eventually you'll get sucked down. It happened with Burnley. Burnley went down. All right, they're coming back up under Vincent Kompany next season. But You do fear that, you know, you can't keep playing with danger this many times, and eventually you will get sucked down. And it would be terribly ironic as if they go down this year or next year, and that brand new spanking stadium, which we've said many a time, is hosting games to Rotherham and Preston, with all due respect, when, you know, it's not coming cheap, and they may have to find a way to host some things in there to pay the rent, because if you go down to the Championship, they're already struggling to pay the bills in the Premier League. When they go down there, the revenues are, I think, they're cut by about 80% or something like that. So, yeah, it would be a shame to see a big, nice, shiny, expensive stadium just sitting there with nothing actually happening inside it.
Yeah, I mean, women's football's taken off, whether it's time to give the Liverpool women's team a stadium, maybe we could buy it, I don't know. but I mean, the thing is, you're right, they flirted with it 2 seasons in a row. This season, they've probably got a manager in who knows how to get them out of relegation trouble, because he's managed to do it quite often with Burnley. You know, he did keep them up quite a bit with his own way of playing. And in a way, I feel like it's almost like a recognition that, you know, instead of going for these sort of high level managers, or think they're high level managers, if you like, people who are, you know, talking about challenging for Champions League places or even better, they sort of realise that the kind of manager they need is someone who'll just help them survive. And he did do that on the whole for Burnley up until that one time. He managed to get them to survive. And I don't know, it feels like maybe there's a bit of recognition there, not only about him saving them this season, but maybe about him just trying to help them consolidate a place that gets them away from this part of the table next season. Because from a financial point of view, as much as it might be boring to see, I'm sure the powers that be at the club would rather have loads of boring games and finish 12th or 13th than go through all this stress that they're going through now, especially if it, but it's so risky that it could go down.
They would love the Roy Hodgson approach.
Yes.
The, you know, win one, draw one, lose one, but I'll get you to 40 points with half a dozen games to go.
Yeah.
And they would love that. And I mean, the fans might not. Like, we had Roy Hodgson ball for 6 months and that was bad enough, but...
Felt longer.
Like, as you say, the powers that be, it just meant that they were guaranteeing the income from the TV and the sponsorship and everything else that comes with being in the Premier League. They'd be quite happy with that. And maybe sure, nice ball will get you that. But as proven with Burnley, like, eventually, you know, you will find yourself slipping down there. And I think, you know, there will always be three or four bad teams in the league, and I think they might get away with it again this season by there being, you know, three teams worse off than them. But I don't see how they can survive, because they're financially crippled. I think, you know, if you ask any level-headed Evertonian, which, as we said, if you get them on their own, they are.
Yeah.
They will say that they are, that they're financially crippled. They can't do nothing. They're literally the wheel and deal. And then, you know, you look at like where they've wasted money, and they're having to knock around the free transfer market. And there's a reason why players are free transfers. Like, okay, look at two of our own, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita, are leaving on free transfers because they can't stay fit. Okay, we're letting Bobby Firmino go as well. But he's reached the end of his time at Liverpool. Like, with all due respect, he can do a job every now and again, but if he was your number nine for week in, week out, well, first of all, he gets too many injuries, so he can't be. And you can't always rely on him to do it, because he's not the player he was 5-6 years ago.
So there's also free transfers, though, with players that the club didn't want to let go. So we've not fought to keep any of those players you've just mentioned, because if we wanted them to stay, we'd have found a way to pay them. The odd free transfer that maybe works is James Milner, for example, came in to us and did some really good work for us. And at the time, City didn't want to lose him, but, you know, they weren't willing to pay enough to keep him. But we weren't the only club who were in for him, I'm sure. That's a different way, isn't it? They've not gone for those players that are highly sought after.
Well, even James Milner's leaving this summer, and it looks like he's going to Brighton,
yeah,
which is a decent outfit. Like, he's not looking at Everton, thinking, ah, I'll go and do another year, but I'll do it at Everton.
Yeah, I wouldn't have to leave house, you know. It's like, he's not, yeah.
I'm not signing up for that slog. I'm going to go down the South Coast, where the weather's a little bit warmer and the lifestyle's, you know, probably similar to Liverpool, a bit more laid back, a bit more, you know, relaxed. And, you know, he's playing for arguably one of the best football teams in the country in terms of how they play football. They're brilliant to watch, and yes, okay, James Milner might not be that type of footballer, but if that's what you're working with every week at Liverpool in terms of quality footballers who, you know, on the day can play unbelievable football on the pitch, then why wouldn't you sign up for that? If someone like that's willing to take your interest, then why not? You're not going to go and slug it out for Sean Dyche every week, because okay, you win the bleep test, but what else is he going to do for them?
Oh God, yeah, I can imagine that must be awful. Like, you get to that point in your career when someone says to you, like, well, we've got Everton for you. It's like, no, the need jobs going anywhere else in the world other than the football. I don't even want to stay a footballer anymore. Talking of Brighton, although there won't be any sort of, it's not like a transfer deal as in a swap or anything like that, swap plus money, part exchange, but they might be getting Milner, but we might be getting one of theirs, according to various reports. But, you know, the Bellingham stuff, turns out we weren't getting him, after all, by the looks of it. But there's another guy that's coming in from there who's, well, he's kind of won more, hasn't he?
Yeah, big Ali Macker. If we can find a way from converting the Gary Mack song and his ball the head to Ali Macker and his, what, gingerish hair and his Irish roots with his Argentinian flair. I don't know whether I've just made something up there, but
that works.
You know, yeah, he's going to come into the club and just, you know, the way they say, like, you slap your balls on the table and excuse the dog, he's having a bit of a sneezing fit. Maybe he's got hay fever.
He appreciates your song.
If he comes in and they say, like, oh, what have you won in your life? And he just goes, bang, World Cup.
Yeah.
Okay. And what? You know, like, you've got players who can slap the Champions League medal on the table, but, like, he's won the World Cup and he was a pivotal part in that Argentinian team. And I've only took more interest in watching him since we've been linked to them. He's one of these players who, like, if you play fancy football, you think he's all right for a few points every weekend. And I just look, like, you watch Brighton, they've got a lot of good players who do catch your eye, but I do see a lot of, for me, I see a lot of Thiago in him. Like, he's a player who you can give the ball to in any situation and he takes care of it, but he also, his first thought seems to be to get the ball forward. And what we've tended to have in our midfield is a lot of safety, a lot of structural parts that just do the job and allow those around them to do the rest of the business. And maybe, you know, we're not the only ones who said, like, the midfield has not worked on various reasons for us this season. Maybe Klopp and the coaching team have looked at it and said, you know what, we need something a bit more different in there. Maybe we need a different approach. And if it's Thiago with legs and more energy, because when we play and Thiago plays well, we're fantastic, but he's not always available and he's not the most mobile of players, and the way he flings himself into tackles, you do fear that he's going to get injured more often than not. If we can buy that of the younger model and get more out of it, why not? And hopefully, you know, we bigged up the Bellingham stuff. If that's not going to come off, if it's McAllister or McAllister, as in, like, the old Gary Mack version, I'm not too bothered. But if he rocks up in a red shirt, I won't be too disappointed.
No. And the thing as well is, I think it's a more realistic signing because, you know, separate conversation about whether or not FSG are the right people for the club and separate conversation whether they're doing enough for the club and all of this. The reality is they're the people running the club. They're the people who own the club. They're the people calling the shots. And I think going for a player that is going to cost what Bellingham costs just isn't their way of doing it. They're more likely to go for a player like McAllister, knowing that if it all works out, he could be worth the kind of money Bellingham's being quoted at now. Now, whether we sold him or whether he stayed is a different matter. Like, they sold Coutinho for good money when that was being offered to him. That worked out well. Likewise, they've managed to hang on to Salah, where maybe, you know, you could have written, given someone a check, you know, they'd have given you a blank check for him almost. So that, to me, is the potential likelihood of us getting him in a way is that FSG will probably look at him and think, well, he'll either stay with us for years to come and really be someone who makes a difference, or we'll sell him for more money to someone else and use that money to get more players. So I can see it happening, but obviously that's just based on guessing and logical guessing rather than any actual inside information, because I don't think there's that much genuine inside information about these days, other than, you know, once a player lets things be known or an agent lets things be known, then stuff will come out. But, I mean, it's only the start, isn't it? Getting one... We're talking about bringing one player in, and we've just talked about losing one player, but we've also... How many have you just mentioned are going, you know? So the squad is getting thinner. And I'm not saying that Bobby, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Naby, I'm not saying that they've made a massive contribution over the course of this last season that we've just had, that, you know, we're going to think, oh God, we've missed them. But the thing is, they're three players who were there to keep, you know, keep the other players' hunger, you know, to come in when needed and to do some kind of a job. So we need replacements for them as well. And I just can't see us doing it. And I think, in a way, with the guy we were talking about last time we were on, Curtis Jones, he's probably going to be the key to us having a good season next season, because it seems like he could be the answer to some of those problems, as in being a player who's there when we need him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've had a few games since our last podcast, and Curtis has started every one, and I think as each game goes by, his performances are getting better. And, you know, it's Klopp's favourite word, the player needs rhythm, and he's got it. And I think it was only right that we probably got to the point where it was, right, Curtis, you've got till the end of the season and you're going to start every game, prove it. If you're good enough, then you'll be here next season and you'll certainly have a place in that squad. But if you're not good enough, then unfortunately we'll have to find somewhere else for you to go because it's not going to work for you. And you know, he's been a solid performer in these games. I don't think he's had a bad game as such. A few games have been better than others, but what I think he's brought to us in more than anything is legs and energy, which again is what I touched on with McAllister, is what we need around that midfield, because Fabinho seems to have aged 5 or 6 years in the space of 12 months and Henderson's aged about 5 or 6 years in the space of 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And the legs and energy that they both had to cover pitch and cover for players who were progressing upfield, normally the fullbacks, is just not there anymore, sadly. And we need that above the pitch. And I think the one notable stat from Curtis Jones's starts is how many ball recoveries he wins. And that's key to what we were really successful in about 2 or 3 years ago, was winning the ball back quick, winning the ball back high up the pitch and allowing turnovers to be in our favour. And with the pace of the players we've got up front and the quality of those lads, it will inevitably lead to more chances. And the more chances you get, you know, the more goals you probably are going to score. And okay, with the last couple of games we won 1-0, we probably should have really had 2 or 3 more goals in every game, but we're creating these chances because we're winning the ball higher up. And if you know, you look on the grand scheme of things, of Oxlade-Chamberlain, Naby Keita and Curtis Jones have not really featured on the whole, you probably would roll them up into one and say there's probably a season's worth of minutes being played across those three lads. So
yeah,
in effect you're not losing too much in the two lads you're letting go. But if Curtis Jones can step up and take that culminative minutes of those three players, and we bring in other players who are able to be available for us, then we might find ourselves in a better position in terms of availability and competition for places next year.
Yeah, definitely. It's also going to be interesting to see what happens with the Trent sort of experiment that we've seen in this latter stage of the season, with the kind of free roll he's had moving between fullback and midfield, and whether Klopp will keep resisting all those calls from people to make Trent a midfielder. I mean, personally, I quite like this idea now and again, but it's not for every game. And I think, you know, when Trent's playing well and we're playing well, you know, you can give him that freedom to go into the middle and he'll do so much with it. But then, you know, it kind of does put the other defenders under more pressure when things aren't going so well. And, you know, the bottom line is, if we had a decent midfield, we wouldn't need Trent to keep doing that, would we? So that's what I think the answer is going to be to that big question about whether Trent will ever go into midfield. I just think Klopp will hopefully find a midfielder who can do the job that Trent's basically doing now when he pops into midfield, and then Trent can go back to being that, you know, that fullback who does so much for us. But we'll see. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of breaking news for you.
Okay.
So, just reading there, after relentless calls from fans, the Premier League has set a trial letting spectators listen on conversations between the referee and the VAR officials for tonight's Liverpool versus Leicester clash. Now, obviously, when this podcast comes out, you would have probably seen the game. You would have seen the conversations, should any take place. But it's a start. I think we would agree. I don't know whether that'll be just the TV spectators at home who'll be able to wear it through the broadcast, or whether, like in NFL rugby type of things, where the referee is mic'd up and you can hear them, and it's, you know, announced to the stadium as well as, you know, those watching on TV broadcast. I think, as we say, people listening to this will know the answer, but I think we can agree it probably is a step in the right direction, because there's so much question marks, as you've said, about referees' decisions. And if we could have a little bit of clarity, at least we then might understand what the hell they were thinking when they made that decision.
Yeah, and he'll diffuse situations like Klopp. I don't know, if, at the time of recording, I'm not sure if he's actually heard back from the FA, because he got put on a charge for daring to question an official and pulling his hamstring at the same time. So maybe it was deserved, maybe it wasn't. But the thing is, if Klopp's, you know, the people around Klopp with all the tech had been able to listen into those conversations that were going on, maybe it would have diffused the situation anyway. You know, instead of it building and building, there's a chance to actually hear what's being said. And if the ref's making, the ref knows he's being listened to, in my thinking, he's going to have to really make sure he gets it right. He can't sort of wing it. you know, he's explaining it and everyone's hearing him explain it. So we'll see. I wonder if they were listening to this podcast. Can't have been, we were recording it, but you never know. Maybe we're being spied on. This is why you shouldn't have TikTok on your phone. You never know. He's going to get in. So by the time we next come back anyway, I reckon we'll have had probably two games by the time we do our next show. So there'll be plenty to talk about, as well as looking ahead to the next game, which is going to be definitely the last game of the season. We'll definitely be on before that. Will we be in Europe? Will we still be fighting for Europe? Will it be a game that we're desperate to watch? Will we be live on TV, or will we be the one that doesn't get shown because there's too many other exciting things to go on? It's not going to be a great last game of the season because we aren't going to be there picking up any trophies or even trying to, but you know what? It can still be good. The season can always be good. And I think the way we've ended this season, at least up until now, it's showing some good signs for next season. As long as we can build on it, we should be getting somewhere next season. But anyway, for now, thanks to Jay Reid. I've been Jim Boardman. You've been listening to Scouser Tommies, and we will be back soon.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.